This is the slot on the programme where we introduce you to some interesting local people who've got an amazing story to share. And Chris Pollard got in touch with me. Chris runs an incredible group. In fact, he's the CEO and the founder of a friendship, a fun, a fellowship group, encouraging befriending and social interaction within the Rother community. Delighted to welcome into the studio. Thank you so much for coming in. Lovely to see you.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me, Sarah.
And now, you're the CEO of this, so that means you're in overall charge. Just tell us where the idea all came from.
Yes, I'm the founder and CEO of Friends All Together in Rother. The idea came from a conversation, actually, in December 2021. Would I consider setting up a charity which provides befriending services? And I went away and thought about it over Christmas, discussed it with my wife. And in the meantime, I'd been put in contact with Rother Voluntary Action. I was made aware of them. And I decided in the new year that I'd go and have a conversation with them. I went down, I had a conversation with them, 20 minutes. And that was in the February 2022. And then they said to me there and then, Chris, we'd like to help you.
Right, okay, but it's a big task, isn't it? Because you've got a lot to... It's sort of... You make it sound easy, setting up a charity, setting up an organisation, but you've got a lot to get through before you even get going.
That's very true. I was lucky in the respect of... I had a good idea how a charity runs, having been CEO of another charity. So I understood the importance of ensuring that books are kept, financial books are kept, everything is put in place at the beginning. And I have we have an excellent bookkeeper, Louisa, and have an excellent set of accountants.
And in terms of, because people don't think about that, do they? They think about the charity, they think about the work, you don't think about the money, all the stuff, the admin that goes with it.
Which is understandable, because let's be frank, everyone who sets up a charity or is involved in a charity, I like to think they're doing it for a good reason. And naturally, the focus is on the service that you're going to provide to the people in the community who need you or need that service. And it can be a pitfall.
In terms of what you do then, I mean, there are a lot of very lonely people that feel quite isolated. Is that all about ensuring that people have someone to talk to, that they can meet other people? How do you work?
Well, we provide a variety of services. Yes, our focus is on loneliness and isolation. To address that, we provide currently two monthly informative social events, one at Tilling Green in Rye and one at Winchelsea Beach. The first one's called Tilling Tea and Cake, and the second one's called Winchelsea Tea and Cake. We also provide weekly befriending calls. So volunteers will make a call through a platform, a secure platform, which ensures safeguarding for both sides.
That's it, the other thing that people don't think about, the safeguarding involved in this.
Yes, that's crucial. You have to ensure that both the volunteer and the person receiving the call are feeling safe. And it records the conversation, which allows us to go in to listen and see if there are any concerns which are raised. And then an AI gives a summary.
Right.
At the end, and then it will,
AI can have its uses then.
Oh, absolutely. And then it will tell you it's clever. It will listen and it will judge the mood. And more often than not, you go in and listen to a conversation from the beginning, and then you hear at the end, listen to the end, and you find the person is uplifted.
Isn't that wonderful? Because that call, obviously, for some people will make all the difference. It might be the only person that they've spoken to for a while.
You're absolutely right. And I wonder whether I could just read something. It's research and statistics regarding loneliness and isolation. And it really does lay bare. This is October 2025. In the last few weeks, in the last week, actually. And if I may just paraphrase it, according to the Office of National Statistics, approximately 9% of the population are experiencing loneliness and or isolation. And if you think about that, this may sound quite insignificant as a percentage, but in actual numbers, it is affecting over 6 million people daily. That's a huge number. And I think that's sobering. And it's also sobering that it is inevitable. that eventually most of us will find ourselves alone, often later in life. And sadly, society, as you know, and I'm sure many people will have experienced, tends towards a bias of two people or more, i.e. a table for two, bringing a plus one or a hotel stay, which is more expensive.
We hear that all the time from our listeners. And actually, something that summed it up for me last year, we did a Christmas special on loneliness. And someone said, I used to be in the driving seat at Christmas. I used to have all this family bustling around. Kids have got married. They've got their own families. I'm now a passenger. Sometimes asked, sometimes not. Sometimes we can all find ourselves lonely at some point in our life, even if you're part of a big bustling family.
That's very true. And I have know of individuals who are in a relationship. Excuse me. And they've told me they feel lonely because whilst they're very happy with their partner, wife, husband or whatever, they don't have the outside interest. Because when you look at the district of Rother, which is why we're friends all together in Rother, it's 197 square miles. We are a rural area, you know, transport is either is diminishing or non-existent. Our challenge is, how do we get to these people? How do we get to them?
That's a huge challenge, isn't it? Because it's not an easy area to navigate.
No, it isn't. I mean, we are sent referrals. We are in contact, you know, with adult social care. We are social prescribers, GPs. But there's still people out there, and it concerns me. It concerns me greatly.
Do you ever think... because obviously this is a huge task you've taken on, and you've really highlighted what a massive issue it is. And you founded this, you're the CEO. Do you ever think, why didn't I just sit back and sit on the sofa and have a nice, easy life? You're coordinating all of this and you're managing all this. You're clearly making a real difference in people's lives. What motivates you?
You can see me smiling. it's interesting. What motivates me? It goes back 60 years. I'm 72. My father was a GP in Maidstone. He was the old-style family doctor. He opened three surgeries in and around Maidstone. All three are there to this day. And I remember as a little boy, I'd sit in his car when he went out and did his daily rounds. I was probably 8, 10 years of age. And I remember the welcome that he used to receive going in and especially coming out. Families would come to the door and wave him off. And then Dad was also a member of the Lions Club. And he used to work out in the community. And I subconsciously, I obviously took this on because I went off and led a different, totally different life. And only came to this, to community work 10 years ago. I'm just channeling what my father did originally.
What was your totally different life before all of this?
I was in the fashion business for 30 years.
Wow, so that's very different.
Yes, ladies fashion. It was textiles. I was an agent for a variety of textile agencies, both in the UK initially back in the 70s, then in Europe, States as well, and then in the latter half of the 80s it went to Turkey, and then eventually in the early 90s with a partner, we bought a textile agency, an existing one, and we were working out of Korea, Taiwan, China, Thailand, that part of the world. And that, Sarah, changed my whole view. That's where I learned the importance. Because of the cultural differences, the Far East, the only way you can succeed in the Far East is to understand why they are talking to you the way they are. The Western way has to disappear. And this taught me so much about the importance of listening. Why is someone saying what they're saying to you in the manner they're saying it to? And doing your best not to react.
We've lost the art of listening in lots of ways, haven't we?
I agree. And it's the way the world is going. And it does concern me. It does concern me.
It's fantastic having you as our lunch break guest. My lovely lunch break guest is Chris Pollard. The incredible work that he's done to embrace, encourage friendship, fellowship and fun through befriending and social interaction within our Rother community. And the service is providing, you know, those statistics that you shared with me, Chris, about the level of loneliness in our society. And then you start this charity and the demands on it, they're not going to get less, are they? They just increase. People need this service.
Unfortunately, no, they're not going to reduce. The country, as we know, financially and health-wise, is not in a good place. And these are the drivers of the challenge, of the challenges that we, Friends All Together in Rother, and multiple charities like us around the country face. We are picking up the pieces. And this is not a criticism. It's a fact. It's the way society is nowadays. We are picking up the pieces which the NHS would have led on 10, 20 years ago. But the money is just not available.
And actually, it used to be that people stayed in their communities. Now people move. We're very mobile as a society. I remember I used to do a late night programme in Cornwall, and a lot of people, the only people they ever spoke to were the other callers on the radio station. And a lot of them had big families, but they'd moved away. They weren't in the area, and that interaction became very fleeting, and they became very lonely.
And that's true. And one of the challenges there is because people have less contact, it's then they become more anxious about, in many cases, going out. I have someone I know. I've known him for 4 years, older man. He had an aneurysm. And since then, he's become almost housebound. He occasionally comes out with his dog. He'd love to come along to one of our events. He's been very open with me. But he said, Chris, I just feel so anxious. I've even offered to go and collect him, pick him up. And he said, look, when the time is right, I hope the time is right soon for him, because I honestly believe he would benefit. But
you're there for him. That's the thing. He knows you're there. He's got that support.
We have a conversation, and it is often, you know, it is often just a conversation in the street. I met a man yesterday who knows. I've seen him on a regular basis. He knows all about us. And I said to him, you've never come along. Do you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel anxious? He said, Chris, thankfully, he said, I've got enough support. He said, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer a few months ago. And he said, I'm grateful for the family support and medical support. And that's when I mentioned our Cancer Cafe.
Yes, tell us more about the Cancer Cafe then, and how that all works.
Well, the Cancer Cafe very briefly came out, and my wife was diagnosed with cancer just over 5 years ago, breast cancer. And we decided on the way back from Canterbury Hospital, I remember saying to her just before we reached the M20 at Ashford, we've got two ways of approaching this. We can get involved with the drama, or we can deal with it on a day-to-day basis. And being the nature of people we are, the C word didn't hit us like an avalanche, which it does to many people, and they naturally just fold, they crumple. We then, Miriam, that's my wife, for the first year she was fine. She was in the system. And then towards the end of the year, she contacted Breast Cancer Now. She'd been made aware of them by her consultant, and she was put in contact with a division called Someone Like Me, and Someone Like Me will buddy you, the person that's been diagnosed with breast cancer, because it can be men as well, with someone who has a similar background to that person. And Miriam was supported for a year by them, and then they said, well, how's your husband? How is he? And Miriam just mentioned it to me, and I said, well, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. But I thought I would ring them and see what kind of support they offered men. And I came away from the call thinking, well, I can do that. So in a nutshell, I became trained as a volunteer telephone supporter for men going through breast cancer for someone like me. Subsequently had to step away. But that then gave me the idea about setting up a cancer cafe, because I had been asked to be the male administrator for a previous cancer support group in another area. And it kind of went from there. I'd got to know of Charlotte. We become friends as well. She was your guest a few weeks ago. And she kindly provides a room for us. And the wonderful volunteers from A Touch of Gentleness come along, and they provide soothing hand massage. There's a lovely lady called Maxine from Macmillan who comes along to provide advice. And people have often said to me, oh, it must be a very miserable situation, room. It's not. We come away laughing. Sometimes we cry, but whatever, we laugh. And you can see the testimonials on our website that people really do appreciate it, because when you're diagnosed, it's fine from the perspective of you are then in the system and you receive your treatment. But when you come out of that system, or you are just about to go into the system, there's nothing there.
Chris, where do you find the time? That's what strikes me. I mean, it seems like you spot a gap in the market, something that's needed, and you fill it. But this must be quite overwhelming at times, quite time-consuming.
It's tiring, and I have to be careful because, okay, society can be a little ageist. I don't think about my age, but sometimes it does come into play. I make the time. I have great support from my wife. She's superb. I have a wonderful befriending coordinator that I work with, Jan, and we have our, you know, she has her pet therapy dog, Ted. And that, to me, is what it's about. She and I, we approach things from a similar perspective. We can look at something, we can discuss it, we either go with it or we don't.
I tell you what, a lot of people are really relating to what you're saying today. I'll just read you out a text. This one requests no name on this, so I won't read out the name of my texter. Your lunchtime guest is so spot on. My texter goes on to say, my past life, I've spent a few years in prison, but of late, I've never felt so alone than I do now. I've had to change so much in my life due to illness and because I've had to stop drinking and smoking. All those people that I thought were friends vanished. The crazy thing, I've done so much for charities and helping others. I say to anyone feeling alone or lonely, as they may sound the same, but they are different. There are so many people that are lonely that you don't necessarily think are lonely.
No, you are. And thank you for that. You're so right. I mean, you can walk past someone in the street. And I think more and more and more, one of the things I've learnt around Rye, I see a number of people and I will often just say hello. And I said hello to a lady on the way to the station this morning. Now, she doesn't remember me, and I had a conversation with her yesterday, and I believe she's in the early stages of dementia. And there's a number of them around, not necessarily in the early stages of dementia, but it's just stop to say hello. On the other hand, I'm a very open person. I find it very straightforward. It's part of my DNA to go into a room and hold a conversation. But it wasn't up until 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. I was an anxious person. I was anxious both at work, and friends of mine used to think that I would come into the room and I was the life and soul of the party. But inside, I had huge anxieties, all based on my dyslexia, and that drove me for years. But now I have learnt later on in life to hone that and to use it is in a way a superpower. I'm very lucky. I'm grateful for being dyslexic because it allows me to look at life and people from a different perspective.
I could talk to you for hours, but we've run out of time. Just tell us where we can find out more about your charity and maybe people could come along or volunteer.
Well, yeah, we'd love people to contact us. We would love some new volunteers. You can contact us via our website, which is www.fair.org.uk, or you can email us via the contact page at hello@fair.org.uk.
Chris, it's been a pleasure having you as our lunch break guest. Thank you so much for coming in.